What's up, people? It's that time again. WGN, let's join the two friends. Jason Whiteside and Rich Lankoff in a legal face-off. Hear the knowledge they got. Legal point and counterpoint, Jay, you know the drill. From sports to Hollywood and the politics world. Don't forget the current events that occur. Plus a couple jabs here and there. Yeah. Airman, listen on WGNplus.com.
I could let this entire theme song play out for Legal Face Off. Joining me on the line is half of Legal Face Off. Our favorite side of Legal Face Off is Rich Lankoff. Hey, Rich, how you doing?
Hey, good. It's officially the only legal show with its own reggae theme. I've confirmed.
Have you? Do you have to Google that? Do you make calls? How do you confirm that?
We have a team of intellectual property attorneys constantly on the lookout for competing. Reggae music with legal shows, so we're on top of it.
You know what? You've just sort of touched on something I've always wondered about, never asked you, with intellectual property. And like, let's say I've heard that part of that is, let's say you have a slogan. Let's go with that first instead of, is that considered intellectual property?
Yes, absolutely. Okay.
So I've heard that if you are going to get the copyright on that or seek to keep others from using it, you have to enforce it every single time. If some people get away with it and you don't enforce it, then you lose the copyright. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for any intellectual property, you have to be vigilant in protecting it because that's, you know, what you said is true. Once you allow others to use it or copy it or infringe on it, then you may lose the ability to protect it altogether. So, yeah, I mean, that's why companies like McDonald's are so vigilant in going after, you know, even people on the fringes or companies on the fringes that might be using their mark.
Is the argument then that if they didn't enforce it there, why should we be withheld from being able to use it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the whole idea behind intellectual property is that people might be confused by using, you know, a mark or a slogan or something like that. So, you know, if you're allowing the public to be confused, then you lose the ability to argue that your brand or your mark is unique. So, yeah, the more you allow people to, you know, others to use it, the less able you are to argue that, it is unique. So, the point of all that is, yeah, you have to be vigilant in protecting that stuff.
Does Fox News have, do you think, a copyright on Fair and Balanced? And how do you think that would change now that they've had to settle with Gretchen Carlson? Because I know Scott Stantis from the Tribune has a cartoon that says male and unbalanced.
Yeah, good question. I mean, I think we're seeing the unraveling of a lot of that. I mean, it's been a rough month for Fox News. I do believe they probably have they have protected the Fair and Balanced logo or trademark, but yeah, it might be tough to argue that they are fair and balanced going forward, given the amount of issues they're having. I mean, just today, you know, Greta Van Susteren announced that she's leaving the company, not according to most reports because of sexual harassment. It seems like a contract issue, but yeah, I mean, it seems like half of their rotation are either suing the company or have left.
Well, and Gretchen Carlson received a payment that was $20 million today in order to settle the allegations, I guess, or her claims, because this didn't go to court. This was basically a negotiation.
Correct, yeah. She received, according to reports, she's going to receive a $20 million settlement from 21st Century Fox, which is, of course, the parent company of Fox News. So, yeah, if you know, both parties agree on that, which apparently they have, then the case will not proceed any further. So, yeah, that appears to be a settlement.
Well, and it looks as though there were more than 20 women who spoke to lawyers about inappropriate behavior, and other women have received smaller payouts. We're not hearing about that. Is it because she's kind of a bigger, you know, alarm bell, sort of has a bigger bullhorn to call attention to the treatment that she received at Fox? Or it was more public because a lot of it happened on the set?
Yeah, she was definitely very public. You know, she was one of the most prominent faces of Fox News. She anchored the morning show, and she was very public in her allegations. She, you know, released some very specific details about what went on at Fox News. And reportedly, she also had recordings of conversations with Roger Ailes. So yeah, that's probably the reason that she received the amount that she did, which, you know, it was one of the bigger settlements we've ever seen in a sexual harassment case. But as you mentioned, there were some other plaintiffs who also apparently, according to reports, have settled their claims against Roger Ailes.
So is our guess that because they settled and she's taken the offer, part of that was to not release those recordings?
Definitely. I mean, you know, this has been obviously a huge black eye for Roger Ailes. I mean, he has resigned, albeit with a $40 million, settlement himself, or retirement package, however you want to call it. But yeah, it's been a huge black eye for him, for the company. So they certainly didn't want those tapes to be released, and they want this to be put to bed as quickly as possible.
In a situation like this, when they have a settlement, do they go after him for some of that money? Does Fox, or do they have like insurance in case these kinds of cases come up?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, in this case, according to the reports that we've seen, Roger Ailes is not going to pay any of this personally. 21st Century Fox, the parent company for Fox News, is paying all of it. But, you know, it really depends on the specifics of the case. He was, in this case, you know, we were all a little surprised that she did not name Fox News or 21st Century Fox or Rupert Murdoch. She didn't name any of those people as defendants. You know, it's not uncommon for a plaintiff to go after everyone just because, you know, the more parties in, the deeper the pockets, the more chance you have to recover. In this case, Gretchen Carlson only named Roger Ailes, which I think actually added a lot, you know, added a lot of credibility to her case. She was just alleging that he alone was responsible. She wasn't alleging that Fox News was responsible. So in this case, it seems like 21st Century Fox is paying the entire settlement.
Will this have an impact on companies across the country in regards to sexual harassment cases?
You know, that's always, you know, that's always something you hope, right? You always hope that companies would be dissuaded by this kind of settlement from acting this way. You would hope that it would send a message to other workplaces and especially, you know, news, which traditionally has been sort of, you know, an old boys network. Obviously, there's been great strides made in the last, you know, couple of decades, but traditionally, you know, news is very male dominated. So you would hope that others would be dissuaded from this type of conduct, but you know.
Sorry, I didn't mean to chuckle, but I don't know what it takes to dissuade people from behaving this way.
Right, you still see this stuff happen all the time, so who knows?
Well, how can somebody who is being sexually harassed, and by the way, this does happen to both men and women. What would you recommend someone do if they need to file a case, if they know that they're receiving treatment, if it's affecting their work, maybe being held back for promotions or their salary if they don't behave a certain way, or just this hostile environment? Should people like keep record of what's going on? You know, keep notes for themselves so they can record it. Just, you know, in order to present something. These are the situations that I'm encountering.
Yeah, I mean, sure, right. I mean, record keeping for sure is a huge part of it. I mean, and that goes to any type of litigation that you might be involved in. And even if, you know, you don't think that something might result in litigation, at the end of the day, you know, like in Gretchen Carlson's case where she allegedly recorded Roger Ailes, it's all going to come down to evidence. I mean, a lot of these sexual harassment cases, unfortunately, you know, from the victim's perspective, don't get the type of settlement that this one got because it becomes a he said, she said, or a she said, he said, or whatever the case may be, and there's just not enough evidence. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of times the victim themselves get attacked. So the more evidence that a victim of sexual harassment has, be it an audio recording or, you know, written evidence. I mean, you know, there was a famous, one of the most prominent cases was there's a Mitsubishi plant down in Normal, Illinois. And that came down to, you know, evidence like there was a calendar involved and there was photos and all sorts of lurid things that were being done. It all comes down to evidence. So, yeah, the more note-taking, the more evidence you can have, the stronger your case will be.
Well, let's talk about the recordings then, because my understanding is in the state of Illinois, and I think this has changed back and forth a little bit as far as having permission to record a conversation.
Yeah, you know, every state is different. In Illinois, I believe the law is that unless both parties consent, you cannot record someone without their consent. I don't know what the law is in the Fox News situation. Again, it varies state to state.
Well, and I've heard that if you're in a public setting, let's say you're in the office or doors are open, are there that sort of wiggle? Is there that wiggle room of they didn't have an expectation of privacy that their conversation wouldn't be either recorded or heard by others?
Yeah, I mean, there is that. You know, there's a difference between there's eavesdropping law versus, you know, straight recording. Yeah, I mean, the more that you open your conversation to others, the less expectation of privacy that you have, the more that you're able, as the person recording, able to argue that your recording should be able to be used in, you know, a legal situation.
Yeah, I've always been curious about that, because I think that what are the reasons to prohibit someone from recording a conversation if they're being victimized, whether it's sexual harassment or domestic violence or something like that?
Well, I mean, that because the question then becomes of, you know, whether obviously if someone's being victimized, that's, you know, you would want that kind of evidence. But, you know, one's victimization is another one. You know, the question of whether someone's being victimized is ultimately something that's going to be decided in court. So the fact that you think that you're being victimized and you're able to record someone, you know, that's a question of interpretation.
So if you record someone, can you be in trouble for recording the conversation, or do you only get in trouble if you try to use it in court, or do you get in any trouble, or is it just not usable?
Yeah, pretty much the penalty is that you're not able to use it. Again, that comes, you know, that comes into states that have, you know, two-party consent laws. Again, where both parties have to consent for the recording to be able to be used. And Illinois is one of those states.
Gotcha. I know this is something that's gone back and forth, because I know that they also were struggling with this on the eavesdropping law when it came to recording encounters with the police department. So that's why it was all kind of wrapped together.
Yeah, exactly.
We are talking to Rich Lenkoff. Okay, sorry. I've always been curious about that. You know, whenever you hear these audio recordings that are released, and, you know, they usually ends up on like TMZ or one of the magazine shows that, you know, we have, what was the name of the basketball owner who was using all these horrible words to describe some of his players? You're like, I've always wondered about that. What kind of legal action can someone take against?
Yeah, the Clippers owner.
Yeah.
Ultimately, he had to sell his team for only $2 billion. Not the worst thing in the world for him.
We are talking to Rich Lenkoff, the better half of Legal Face Off, and you can catch it on WGNplus.com. They have a podcast that drops every week. What's this week's conversation about?
We taped last week. We talked about the legal implications of the Zika virus. So we actually talked about some interesting things that employers have to be aware of, including, you know, whether you can prohibit an employee from working if she has, you know, if they are exposed to an area that has the Zika virus. We also talked about some, you know, legal avenues that someone could pursue if they have the Zika virus. We also had a couple of lawyers come in who have authored a book on gender equality in the workplace. A couple of good topics on Legal Face-Off last week.
And you can find that on WGNplus.com. Can you hang on? I want to talk a little bit about the diversity. There was a conversation with a couple of the Supreme Court justices, and they were talking about the lack of diversity, and not just racially or gender-wise, but in terms of region and where they come from and schools that they go to. Would you mind talking about that a little bit? I don't know if I sent
you. Sure, of course.
And that was Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan were talking about it recently. So I was curious about your thoughts. More with Rich Lenkoff when we come back on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me on the line is Rich Lenkoff, the brighter, smarter half of Legal Face Off. Jason Whiteside is his pal in crime. I don't know if that makes sense to say your partner in crime. It sounds weird when we say a legal show. Wouldn't you say, Rich?
Yeah, he's often the perpetrator of many crimes, so it's perfectly legitimate to say that.
Social crimes? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
John Mellencamp always makes me think of Indiana, just always does. I know he was born in Indiana. And that also brings us to our conversation about the Supreme Court. Only one justice is from the Midwest. Everybody else is has grown up on the East or West Coast. All of them have graduated from just three Ivy Leagues and Ivy League schools. Is there something to be said about having a more diverse Supreme Court?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think you would like to have a Supreme Court that looks a little more like America, but it's just not that way, you know. I mean, as you mentioned, most of the justices come from a couple of law schools, Harvard, Yale. Most of them are white, you know, male from either coast. You know, there's, I think, four or five of them from New York alone. Merrick Garland, who is the nominee to take Scalia's seat, his nomination, of course, has been stalled by the Republicans. He is white, male, Jewish, Harvard graduate. Most of his career has been spent in Washington. He is from Chicago, so that is a little more diverse in terms of geography. But, yeah, I think to answer your question, it would be nice if not only, you know, where they're from and what their backgrounds are, but also, you know, where they have, what kind of law they practice. You know, it wasn't always the case where the Supreme Court justice was made up mostly of former federal court judges. You know, you used to have a lot more law professors, state court judges. Right now, we have almost exclusively federal court justices or federal former federal court judges, I should say. Elena Kagan was a law school dean, but everyone else pretty much comes from the federal circuit.
And I also think religion is important in this case, because what they are saddled with, their job is to have these philosophical and legal conversations that is impacted by the, you know, as we talked about, where they grew up, but also the kind of experiences they have. And if you have all the justices as Catholics or of a Jewish background, how do you, you know, sort of tackle so many of the issues that are important? And as you mentioned, it used to be law professors predominantly, or practicing lawyers, or even governors. I just think that it sort of limits the sort of conversation they might have, or the impact they would have on cases.
Yeah, I mean, no question. I mean, thankfully, you know, I think one of the biggest things that you would want is, you know, ethnic, racial diversity. I mean, you know, you do have a lot of progress there in terms of female justices, and you know, you've got African American justices and Hispanic justices. Of course, you know, some of those boxes are all checked off with one person.
right.
But yeah, I agree with you that, you know, you don't necessarily want a Supreme Court panel that is exclusively Roman Catholic or Jewish.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens after the election, because that'll determine who our next Supreme Court justice is, and several more after that, because there are going to be some changes in the next few years. Thank you so much, Rich Lenkoff. We look forward to talking to you hopefully next week. I'm sure there'll always be something legal to talk about.
Yeah, and if I could throw in one more plug for our documentary that I produced with the 85 Bears, that is airing tomorrow on PBS. So, hope all of your listeners tune in to PBS to check out our movie 85. It is a 2-hour look at the greatest team in pro football history, as we call it. We've got interviews with everyone from President Obama to Bill Murray to Jeremy Piven. So check it out. We think it's a great film.
Set your DVR to record the documentary about the 85 Bears. Y'all want to shuffle. You know you do. Thank you so much, Rich. Have a great night.
Hey, thanks, Patty. Appreciate it.